So should we talk about the genesis of wanting to do a podcast and having a discussion?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Part of my whole idea for this is... peas are really poppy. Part of my whole idea for this is that I think everyone learns a lot more through having a discussion. No matter if you think that your viewpoint is right or not, it can clarify your viewpoint. And I think the most important thing is to actually learn what other people think of a thing. It expands your worldview and makes you much better at whatever form of art you're trying to do.
That's right. And that's why there's therapists, because without a discussion, we never learn anything about ourselves. So
this is like movie therapy.
Movie therapy.
Yes. There's science, there's therapy. It's all, it's colliding.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of therapists, my first segue.
Yes. Awesome. You nailed it. You really nailed it.
Awesome. Thanks. I like when they're smooth like that. We watched the movie Shutter Island this last week, I don't know, about a week ago, approximately.
Yeah.
Not that it matters. We just want to talk about, we haven't talked before the show about our feelings about it. No. From your email, when I suggested it as a title, I wasn't sure how to read your feelings about the movie at all.
Ah.
I know it's kind of a divisive movie in some regards.
Well, I had seen it before. Mm-hmm. I had seen the movie before, but I have this really bad reputation of when I have a day job, and I saw it while having a day job, waking up at 6:30 in the morning, I fall asleep. And I would try so desperately to stay awake, you know, a Friday night, rent a movie and right. watch it, and I would just kind of nod out throughout the end. So it was, for me, watching it was nice because I could like fill in the parts that I missed, and I tried to remember, like, do I actually remember how this ended?
Right.
Because I have a really bad memory, like a really bad memory. So do I remember how this movie ended? And
so it's like a little game you get to play with yourself.
It was. And at what point in the movie did I, and if I did figure out the, you know, the twist ending, at what point in the movie did I figure it out? So that was the game I played as I watched the movie.
Well, and there is a twist, or I guess a series of twists, kind of,
mm-hmm.
Which we are totally going to talk about because you have to.
Spoiler alert!
Yes, exactly. There should be a big spoiler alert over this whole thing. I need a horn or a bell or something that actually warns people. But you can't really talk about the movie without talking about the spoilers, I don't think, about the twists. Also, I just don't, in general, I don't think it diminishes from a work necessarily to know what it's about before you go in. And I have some specific thoughts as to how that like relates to this movie. So overall, what are your feelings of the movie?
Overall, my feelings of the movie, it was gripping. And the music is really what got to me.
Mm-hmm.
That music like pulled from a time where it would have been kind of normal to hear that music in a movie.
Right.
Like a Hitchcockian feeling towards it. So that the music was gripping. The movie was gripping. So I was emotionally like invested watching it even for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I enjoyed it
mm-hmm.
a second time. And I didn't know if I was going to.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah, I really did.
I remember I went and saw it in the theater the first time, and I did. I totally, at the beginning, very close to the beginning, I figured out that it was him who was actually in the institution.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that the movie makes a, it doesn't try to hide that at all.
No.
I think if you are trying not to notice what's going on, but it's just there's too much surrealism in mm-hmm. it to really think that that's exactly what's happening.
Well, Leonardo DiCaprio's character is hallucinating right. throughout the movie in an insane asylum. So there has to be some kind of thought in the viewer's mind that maybe he's the crazy one, because normal people don't, you know, see their dead wives in the corner bleeding out of their stomachs.
Right. Or Holocaust victims or...
Yeah. Well, you know... That's normal.
Not on a good day, anyway, hopefully.
If I haven't gotten 8 hours of sleep, I usually... No, that's so bad. Oh, God. Yeah. So, but I had a question.
Mm-hmm.
What is Martin Scorsese's obsession with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Do you... not necessarily appreciate their efforts together.
Oh, no, or... no. I love their movies together. Okay. It is not, this is not a, like a roundabout way, to like dog them, but this is like Martin Scorsese loves him. Like,
yes,
he has a real love for Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, like, I mean, I can see why acting wise, but there's gotta be something more.
And he likes to, beat the crap out of him.
Yes. Yeah.
It's almost, and I wonder if part of it is he likes to take someone that has a very clean image and then put them in horrible situations and make them look non-heroic. You know, as he has done, he's definitely kind of pleading against type, and he uses that, especially in this movie, which this movie, I don't know if you've read up on it at all. I like when I do hand gestures on the radio. It's fantastic. It really helps sell my point. But the movie was very much inspired by these old RKO movies from the 40s and 50s that Val Lewton produced. And the reason that I was kind of tuned into this was I had gotten a box set of Val Lewton movies right before I saw Shutter Island.
Oh.
And Scorsese actually does the commentary on the documentaries.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, okay, I know that he's into these like dreamy studio horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
That were low budget and they looked weird, but they had a lot of atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I'd been watching these for like a week or two before I went and saw it. So like definitely as soon as I went into the theater and you see that ship coming out of the fog,
yeah.
It's the first thing. And it's this surreal, ghostly, and it looks like a black and white movie.
It does. And it had that feel.
Yeah. And so I really think that he was playing with that. And DiCaprio is very good at, you could see him having been in movies, being a character actor, you know, any time in the past, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that he was kind of using that, playing a meta game of making all these other references, which there's, I don't know, 1.5 billion references to other movies inside this one. So,
yeah, I just didn't know if it was like they both have like Italian names or, you know, Martin Scorsese has a thing for him.
I don't know. He's a handsome man.
He is a handsome man. Most people would probably go gay for Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Not saying that you would. I would totally go gay for him.
Okay.
Totally go gay for him.
I don't know if he'd ask that of you, but
no,
it's good to know.
Well, you know what? He might.
Yeah.
Some guys are into
movie
that.
Stars are.
They're
yeah,
weird.
Yeah.
But like, because I'm a big fan of Boardwalk Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a character on Boardwalk Empire, the Jimmy Darmody character, looks just like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right.
It was, you know, the HBO version of Leo is in Boardwalk Empire. So
you have the pay cable version as opposed to the marquee version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a big thought I had and I wrote about it and that's what came out. So
that's, I was wondering a lot about the other casting in the movie actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know. The way my mind works a lot of times is I will make a reference to a thing in the past. So to me, the fact that the guy who was the head of the guards was, in Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
It's one of those connections. I'm like, is he making that connection or is it just me?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, I mean, you've got Max von Sydow and you've got, all these other characters from movies that were kind of like this.
Well, and that was actually shocking to me when I heard the warden's voice for the first time.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, that's Buffalo Bill.
Right.
And I actually had to go online and double check if I was right. And I was right. But it was like, it was a terrifying character.
Right.
Even though he wasn't played very big in this movie. But because of that voice, it connected me to the terror of Silence of the Lambs.
Exactly. And
yeah.
They have a mostly, it's kind of an intense conversation.
Oh God.
In the car. Mm-hmm. And the whole conversation.
I actually wrote it down.
Yes.
Because it wasn't it.
I took notes on it, too. During that conversation, he lays out, the warden basically lays out Freud's concepts from civilization and its discontents of
So he really quoted Freud?
It's his theory.
It's
too long. Allow me to sum up. Okay. Is basically what he did.
Wait, but you knew this when you heard it?
Yeah.
You're so smart.
Well, it's one of those things that, which is actually part of the birth of this whole show.
Yeah.
One of the concepts in there is the narcissism of small differences or minor differences. And I feel like I'm stealing someone else's bit, but that when you are very similar to someone else, you will find a small thing and you'll pick and pick at that one small thing. But there's also portions of the book that are about us being civilized animals, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
And the fact that civilization is something that we put over that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he has the talk and he asks about if I bit into your eyeball, would you have time to stop me before I blinded you?
Yeah. And God gave us violence to wage in his honor,
yes.
or his order. And can my violence conquer yours?
Right.
Yeah.
And on one hand, you can definitely see where that could just be an interesting conversation mm-hmm. that two people could have.
Yeah.
Or if you're adversaries, then it's a very threatening conversation.
Yeah. And, of course, this was the first time of them really meeting each other.
Right.
In the movie. And they're having, like, he is letting him know, I am not to be messed with.
Right.
They've obviously had altercations. Multiple altercations. Yeah. So, I mean, that was intense. I mean, just this. That voice is disturbing. Let's just put it plainly.
It can't not be. And it's always he wants me to put lotion on my skin.
Always.
That's what it is.
Always. And I have a fear of gaining weight because of him. And turning my skin into his. Yeah. Not to go off on a Silence of the Lambs tangent. But, oh my God, I saw that at way too young an age. Way too young.
I did too. But I personally... that score I listen
yes.
to a lot. It's good for some reason when I'm running, like, because I think of Clarice at the beginning when she's running, and it's like that. It's just that violin heavy score, and it is. It's like been on every iPod I've ever had.
I feel lame. I listen to like pop music when I run, like Kelly Clarkson, Breakaway. Here we go.
No, I do that too, but you know, it's. When you have all these big, heavy thoughts yes. in your head, you have to have some big, heavy music to go with it. That's how it works.
So Gold Digger, Kanye West Gold Diggers.
Well, you can switch back and forth. You know, maybe some Philip Glass and then some Kanye.
All right, great.
Yeah.
Great.
They play well together.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. So moving on to a lighter topic, World War II.
Nicely done.
Yeah. That's my first segue. How'd it go?
It was beautiful.
All right,
it's,
great.
Yeah, it's entirely fitting.
I really loved how this movie brought in World War II, mm-hmm. like those scenes that we were talking about earlier, especially like the experimenting, you know, the Nazis experimenting on. I'm just fascinated by the events that occurred in World War II. And
right.
what's even more fascinating for me is the fact that I didn't learn them in school at all. Like, I have learned most of everything I know about World War II through movies, books,
right.
you know, History Channel. Like, most of this stuff is not taught in schools whatsoever.
Right. You learn that it was an event that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, about annexing the Rhineland and things like that. But nothing about the actual behind the curtain.
What country did this war take place?
Exactly.
You know? Go for C. It's always the letter C.
Was it 1941, 1942? And that was... it's been a subject that interested me since I was in high school. Like, when I was in high school, I studied German, and Schindler's List had just come out.
Oh, wow. So it was like kismet.
Yes. actually, I saw Schindler's List 6 times in the theater.
Wow.
Because I, as a teenager, really enjoyed watching depressing movies, apparently.
You were a sunny young boy.
Yes. But it was like a thing. It was like a thing we did. I don't know. Several mm-hmm. of the people from... my German class, like, saw
oh,
multiple
okay.
times. And I actually read big chunks of Mein Kampf and The Rise and Fall of the Third mm-hmm. Reich at the time, just because it was, not to be reductive, but it's like a true crime story.
Yeah.
Where there's so many ins and outs of it. and the liberation of the different camps and what they found mm-hmm. had gone on, and not just the big things, but I guess the horrible tiny atrocities that they also committed.
I know. A lot of horrible tiny atrocities. That was bad. Yeah. So, I mean, I like how they pulled it in and brought, like, another perspective mm-hmm. and the effects the war had on, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio's.
Well, what did you think was the purpose of bringing that in? Because it could be stated that it doesn't have anything to do with his actual through line with his wife.
No, it doesn't. But I think there was a need that he had to be traumatized in some way mm-hmm. because he admitted that he was not present because his wife, he knew something was wrong with her. He wasn't present. He was busy drinking down his own demons.
Right.
So that's kind of why I think they had to throw it in there, and just kind of how his dream sequences, you know, the dead bodies would actually be his own daughter
right.
and, you know, kind of start to intertwine there.
Yeah. He's been damaged for a long time back. Mm-hmm. And it was not all the horrible things that he saw in the war that actually cracked him.
No.
It was what his wife did and what he did to her in turn
mm-hmm.
That really just broke his brain.
Well, severed the string to reality.
Right.
And having to come up with another reality to be able to cope. And I think that's what some people do. Like, I think that's the power of denial. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, I'm going to break away from reality and create this alternate reality in order to deal, or in order to not deal
right.
with the emotions.
Well, and I think on a certain level, I mean, everyone does that. Like, you have a character that you portray.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen you in, the other context of that we know each other, writing sketch comedy, slip into characters when we're trying out sketches, and you try a face on for a little bit and then you throw it away if it's not working. But have you personally ever found yourself speaking with an accent or something for just for way too long of a time? Like, it becomes an affectation almost.
I think it's almost a mirroring thing. Mm-hmm. I want people to feel comfortable with me subconsciously.
Right.
Like, maybe I want their approval. I want them to feel comfortable. If you have an accent, I will take on your accent. And I don't mean to.
Right.
It's just like, I'm mirroring you. I'm, like, engaged with you. And now I'm talking like you.
Exactly.
And, I don't mean to do it. And I've actually had a friend that was offended. Like, stop making fun of me. Like, pulled me aside. You're making fun of me.
Right.
And I'm totally unaware I'm doing it.
Right. But it's, I mean, it's also, on a very minor level, I think sort of the same thing that happens to him is it's a coping mechanism
mm-hmm.
to deal with a particular situation, but his situation is never changing. It's never going away.
No, it's not.
It's never going to get better.
No. And that, oh God. And you know, that was probably what came out of the movie for me, is that is what his, what happened between him and his wife and the, you know, the murder of their children mm-hmm. is probably the most terrifying fear I have. Of being sick and not knowing, like being mentally disturbed
right.
and not knowing.
Right.
And harming, you know, harming children, innocent children.
Right.
In the process of it. Like, I know I'm not crazy. I have quirks, you know, I'm a little self-centered.
I feel very confident sitting across from you here at this table. There's no cutlery in this room.
Okay,
I just wanted to let you know.
Yeah. But I have a pencil. Shh. And if I could get this pencil in your eyeball.
Could I stop you before
you
blinded me?
No, I don't know. But I mean, like, I mean, there's been so many news stories about postpartum depression and how that affects women.
Right.
That's a fear. That's,
well, I found it interesting that they don't go at all into her psychosis.
Mm-mm. No.
It is, it's just presented as, well, and I guess from Teddy's point of view, that's all it was. He doesn't understand it. He doesn't have a world, a window into her world.
No, he wouldn't comprehend it. So, I mean, he just, it was something he was pushing under the rug. So why would he now have this awareness of
right.
my wife is losing it and I need to get her help.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now for a commercial break.
Speaking of the wife, have you seen Inception?
Yes.
Okay, I was going to say, like, everyone in the world saw the movie. So,
And I'm still wondering if that spinning top is going to fall or not. I am still on the edge of my seat.
We should have Christopher and Jonathan Nolan on the show sometime. And
well, I didn't want to spoil. That's who our guests are next week. So people should listen in.
Yeah, another spoiler alert. When I watched Inception, I was struck by the similarity of his character. Like, he's doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's fighting inside his own mind against a wife that's no longer there.
Yeah. But this one, he's aware that there's something wrong with his wife.
This is true.
He is aware that she's lost it. And she doesn't, you know, she's lost in this other world and doesn't want to come back to reality.
He's not just pining for the fjords, as it were.
I thought that was a gold reference. Pining for gold? Oh, it's panning.
That's panning for gold.
I'm not so smart. I'm so pretty.
Which, prettiness works well
on podcasts. Yes.
Yes.
I look like a Victoria's Secret model, just in case you're wondering. It's really hard being this gorgeous. Oh, God. Wish people would just take me seriously. Yeah. But that was like a big kind of like a theme that I picked out was let go of the past to uncover or see the truth for what it is. Like, if I'm too attached to the story I've created about my past, I'll never see the truth of it.
Right.
And I think that's kind of really, really smart.
That's so eloquently put,
so
too.
So new age, and I should go on Oprah if she was still around. That would be an awesome,
I didn't know what to think going in. Obviously, I went and saw it in the theater because it was a Marty movie, and I'm a huge nerd, so.
And I'm glad you guys are that close. You referred him as Marty.
Yeah, it's a thing, you know. It's we're bros, so we can do that. I have not had a great track record with Dennis Lehane adaptations in the past, like Mystic River. Have you seen?
Oh, yes, yes. Okay.
Which I'm very conflicted about as a movie. Like, I really like Clint Eastwood as a director, and I think there's interesting stuff in there. But as a story, it doesn't necessarily
hold up throughout.
Which, I mean, obviously it could be a whole other show. But so going into it, I had apprehension about it, if I would appreciate it or not, and if it was going to rely too heavily on the twist. And I have since I've listened to a couple hours worth of the audiobook, which is dead on like the movie. It's a little frightening.
So they probably didn't even have a script. They're like, here, read this book. These are your lines. Here you go.
So
just highlight them. You'll be fine.
It's like there is a framing device with Mark Ruffalo's character, who he's revealed to be of the doctor, of his
doctor.
Diary, at the beginning. But it really makes me appreciate the artistry of doing the things like the ship coming in out of the fog.
Mm-hmm.
And the visuals of it, and like the super saturated, almost Technicolor look, and the surrealism, because none of that is in the book, and it's not something that you could necessarily
write.
Exactly.
Yeah, you couldn't write that out.
And it is part of the reason why I think that he didn't really try to hide the twist of he's the one in the asylum, because it's so prevalent of like, there's wacky stuff going on. I mean, the setting and the look of it, but down to continuity errors, or I guess quote unquote continuity errors of the scene where he's interviewing the inmates.
Yes.
The
other patients.
Yes, the other patients. I'm sorry, I made the same mistake he did. they're not criminals, they're patients.
They're criminally insane.
Right. When he's interviewing the woman, Mrs. Kearns.
Yes.
And she's obviously playing a role. She asks for water so she can have a moment alone with him. And then she has no glass in her hand, but she's still pantomiming drinking.
Yes.
And then she sets it down, and then the water level changes depending on what side you're looking at. Which, one of the things is, Scorsese is sort of infamous for having continuity errors because of the way he shoots. There's a scene in The Departed, which if you were the script supervisor for that movie, you would, your head would explode because things moving around the table and the drinks is his cranberry juice is all over the place. But I don't really think that he was trying to hide what's going on, but he's also not just being blatant, and it's not the first thing that's seen in the movie is, oh, he's on a couch and he's talking about it or whatever.
Yeah. It's, well, being Ben Kingsley comes out, like the first thing he says, I'm a different doctor. Right. I try to get my patients, you know, I do reenactments. I mean, he just flat out says, like, I do reenactments.
Exactly.
To try to get people to see what they did.
And
wink, wink.
Right. The that's in my notes here, is that Crawley lays out Teddy's own psychosis as Rachel Solando's. Like, the whole shtick of she doesn't know that she's here. She believes she's someone else.
Yeah.
And he mixes it with some of the truth of, quote unquote, Teddy's story with the drowned children and everything. Yes. And it still doesn't, it triggers for him, I believe that's when it's triggering images of the war.
It is. It starts to trigger his flashbacks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's, but it's not the direct ones of his wife laying the children on the grass, laying the children on the grass like you would think it would be. So it's, once again, like Inception, you're several layers of denial deep dealing with this thing.
Yeah. That reminds me of my favorite quote from this movie.
Oh, what was your favorite quote from the movie?
They were talking about the landscape around Ward C and how there are 1,000 plants with thorns as big as my dick. I remember doing almost a spit take if I had, liquid in my mouth and going, what the hell? That seems so out of place in this movie.
Is that big or small?
Thorns are small and prickly.
Right. If a thorn is big, it kind of negates the purpose of a thorn, doesn't it? Because you could, easily avoid it. And it wouldn't actually dig into you.
It didn't make much sense.
No.
Unless you I just have horrible visualizations of this plant.
Some plant-human hybrid.
Yes.
And, and that's actually, that was the other, what is he, the head of security. He's the one who initially welcomes them to the island and takes their guns and everything, which was another connection.
Oh, because Mark Ruffalo, how he couldn't get his gun out.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he's not used to a gun.
No.
But another weird thing, Mark Ruffalo was in Zodiac. John Carroll Lynch, I believe, is the other actor. I might have to edit. Check in the show notes for if I got that right. But he also was in Zodiac, and he was the main suspect.
Oh, okay.
For a while of the Zodiac killings. So
it's amazing to see all these connections.
Right. It's this other thing where I'm like, okay, is it just because he likes these character actors, or is it because he's making a reference?
Yeah. Or no one else was available.
Right.
Never know.
Maybe, we need a stocky guy. I was like, who's available? Oh, yeah, that one guy.
Yeah. Let's stay away from the Seinfeld characters. I need someone who's got a little more depth.
Although, to be fair, I think he did play Drew Carey's cross-dressing brother.
Yes, he did. So. He did play Drew Carey's, which is an underrated show. Moving onward. there was a point in the movie where they're in Ward C. I think it's called Ward C, right?
The
Building C, Ward C. The criminally, the super.
Yes, yes.
The really gross place.
The one where they're, the place where they were debating leaving the people chained up.
Yes,
if it flooded.
And just in case it flooded. Yeah. And how that may or may not be wrong.
Right.
Where it's that suspense kind of, all of a sudden a crazy person, they're walking around, it's all dark, and a crazy person comes up and goes, tag, you're it!
Right.
And I said out loud, you MF-er, to Martin Scorsese, because I hate being scared.
Uh-huh.
I hate, and I know some people, that's why they go and see scary movies, because they want that rush of adrenaline, and I do not appreciate that in my movies. I like to be calm and think and not be terrified.
Right.
And because I lose feeling in my hands. Like, my blood rushes so much, I get tingly in my hands. Oh, I hate that feeling. Yeah, so that was not fun. That was not a fun moment for me.
But a good scene otherwise.
It was a great scene, and he was really weird looking, the crazy guy that he eventually, like, beat the crap out of later on. You know, once he caught him, started beating the crap out of him. Yeah.
That's, I do have, at least, like, you're very honest and open about that, and you're still willing to go along with it. And that's one of the problems I have sometimes talking to people about a movie, and they'll say, oh, that was a bad movie. It scared me. I'm like, well, if it scared you, it was probably a good movie.
Yeah, they did a great job.
And you should admit that. It's not to your taste. There's there's a difference there. I mean, there are movies. There's a documentary called Dear Zachary from a couple years ago that I've heard to referred to as a bad movie. It's not. It's a very good movie. It will move you to tears. Like,
oh.
And people, it's
like curl up in a ball.
Yes.
And, don't touch me.
Right.
Don't touch me.
And society is screwed. We're all horrible people and, you know, kind of a thing. But it's really well done. to like rip your heart out like that, which I'm a weeper anyway. I'm just going to admit that.
You're amongst friends. You're amongst friends.
But yeah, so I'm glad that you didn't, turn the movie off and get angry at it at that point.
No. And I'm glad it was only one time. Like, he wasn't doing it over and over again for shock value.
Right.
Like, because that can be kind of lame. But, I mean, if that's the kind of movie you're going for, this wasn't that kind of movie.
Right.
It was,
and that's a whole other thing. And then it becomes numbing. And then is it really that effective if the cat jumps out 15 times?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, just get out and kill the guy already because I'm really tired of this. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I want to... What kind of drugs was he on?
Some really good ones.
They seem amazing.
And he, part of the clues, if you will, or I guess if you're regarding it as a twist, there are clues to the twist. Otherwise, they're just symptoms. But his ongoing battle with the headaches and the nausea. I mean, the first time you see him, he is literally vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever he is on somehow brings him back enough that he functions in his own delusion.
Yeah.
But it doesn't break through that point, which I thought was weird because the scene where he's having the horrible headaches and they carry him down. And it was a very good representation of having a migraine.
Oh, gosh, yes.
With the blinding light and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see other people standing in the room generally when that happens to me. I also wondered, like, what is the combination that they have there?
Yeah.
And also, it's nice that they keep dosing him with these quote-unquote aspirins.
And cigarettes.
Right.
Yeah.
To kind of keep him in that state.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, is he going through withdrawal this entire time?
Right.
And they're just giving him enough so he's not violent, because apparently, from what we find out at the end, he's a violent patient. Like, he, you know, maims anyone who kind of comes into contact with him. So, well, being on the meds keeps him nice and stable.
Right. And that's part of his character was apparently Scorsese showed the movie Laura, which is a film noir, I believe, by Fox. And his character is based on the main character from that movie. And, you know, these film noir movies, the detectives are kind of famous for not actually following the letter of the law and just beating the crap out of whoever they need to.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a nice touch is, you know, they put him definitely in that.
I mean, the first scene you see, he's got a band-aid on his head. You know, he's roughed it up.
Yes.
You just don't assume it's with a guard. It's been with, you know, someone he was trying to apprehend.
Right. And through the beginning of the movie, he doesn't seem that he would just snap to violence like that.
No, not at all.
Until they get to the scene where he is in the doctor's study or lounge or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Had a little static. They're kind of cross-examining him and calling him a violent individual and all that stuff. And Max von Sydow refers to his excellent defensive capabilities or defensive mechanisms.
Yes.
Which was another one of those. They're not really hiding what they're doing. Like, no. They're just openly talking about him being nuts.
Yes.
And seem to be kind of amused at it, which I thought was an interesting touch. But that's also, I believe, the first scene where he gets some more drugs.
Yeah.
So.
It is.
You have a lot more notes than me, so you should go next.
Well, I'm kind of running out, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a point where I asked myself, are all these rats necessary on the cliff? And right. He finds the supposed real Rachel, who is a doctor, who they've committed. And, you know, she was the first voice of reason, but she wasn't a voice of reason. She was a hallucination.
Which
is that extra twist, you know?
Yeah. And I thought, the rats, first of all, there's like a shot of the rats, then a reaction shot, then another shot of the rats, then another reaction. And then I think like four or five more shots of the rats.
And they just keep coming.
Yeah.
I was like, really? More rats? Like, I know it's the great outdoors.
Right.
Come on. I mean, I knew there was a point because she was lighting a fire, so they'd be leaving the cave.
Right.
But wouldn't the presence of a human make them leave? I don't know. It was just a lot of rats. A lot of rats.
And that's another thing where I don't know how much of what you're seeing is just in his head,
mm-hmm.
and how much is, like, obviously when you get to the end of the movie and you see the grounds and everything, there hasn't been a horrible storm. Mm-hmm. Like, everything looks very nice and pastoral. But it was one of those, I was like, okay, is he commenting because there's all these rats crawling out of the rocks? And I'm like, is this a filmmaker metaphor, or is it the character's metaphor for what's going on, or is it what he's actually envisioning? Like, once again, having the several layers to go through there, to dig through there, makes it interesting. And I guess it's a nice thing about a metaphor is you can make it mean anything.
I know, that's the nice part. And meanwhile, most people are just going, oh, look, there's rats. Damn, that's gross.
Rats be gross and all.
they dirty.
But the cave scene with the quote unquote real Rachel, when I first watched it, like, he pulls a trick in the shooting, mm-hmm. and the staging of that scene where you're never on the correct side. The camera's never on the correct side. You're always on the opposite side of the fire.
Oh, okay.
So you actually, I think it's supposed to be kind of a clue that he's not talking to an actual person, because you're seeing from both characters' perspectives.
Gotcha.
And it's always in front of both people's faces when they're talking.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
It's one of those little things.
Me smart. But I really loved the end, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved the end, and I really loved the fact that pretty much his last line, I'm guessing it was the last line, you know, live as a monster or die as a good man.
Right.
And how he, and then my perspective is he chose to get a lobotomy. He's choosing this.
Right. Because, which to me, that's the twist of the movie. And that's the point where throughout the whole movie I was very engaged and I enjoyed it. I mean, if that's the correct term, I went along with it the whole movie. And then that part was a sucker punch.
Yeah.
Because it's the most lucid he's looked throughout the whole mm-hmm. film. And the look, the dawning of realization on Mark Ruffalo's face. Yeah. That, because he first goes up to him and he thinks he's still playing the role, which mm-hmm. I don't think he is. He thinks he's still...
I think he was checking. He was checking to see, like, taking his temperature. Where are you at? Are you going to call me doctor? Or are you going to call me Chuck,
right.
your partner?
Right.
Yeah.
And he plays to the Chuck mm-hmm. Persona, and Ruffalo looks disappointed and
shakes his head
sadly. And as DiCaprio stands up and starts walking away, the look on Ruffalo's face is like, wait a second. Wait, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And he calls out. I think the actual last line is just Teddy.
Yeah.
He says the fictitious name. And DiCaprio doesn't turn, mm-mm, doesn't flinch at all,
nope,
which makes me think, I mean, it could be the spinning top of Inception. You're never supposed to know. But
this one seems a lot more clear.
Yes.
Like, I mean, what would you do if that was your life? Would you choose the lobotomy so you wouldn't have to live in, you know, live in this life where something horrible happened, you know, to your, the ones you loved, and you ended up killing your own wife because of your anger and grief.
Right.
You know, every day, live that over and over again, or just, you know, cut out a big part of my brain and I'm just going to go on as a robot.
Right.
And when's my next meal? Okay, great.
Well, and the interesting thing is their whole procedure throughout, mm-hmm, the whole movie was a success.
Yes.
It worked.
Mm-hmm.
It got him out of his own psychosis.
Yeah.
But it doesn't help him at all.
No.
And he plays it that way, and they don't actually know that it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Is the
because
sad
they
thing.
Said he had breakthroughs. Like the doctor, the head psychiatrist says, you've had two more, you know, once
right.
he finally comes to terms with it, he's like, you've had two other breakthroughs, but they haven't lasted this long.
Right.
So it sounds like he, you know, in my perspective, he had a full breakthrough and said, gross, I'm going back
right.
to La La Land.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm going to buy the ticket. I'm going to push my chips across the table and get an ice pick in my eye socket.
Ugh. That was a real Shudder from Shudder Island.
I remember when it first came out, I was talking to someone and they kept referring to it as Shudder
yes.
Island. And they didn't actually realize that it was different. I was like, you've seen it spelled.
It's like a window shutter.
Right.
Shudder. Yes.
I had nothing to follow that into that up with.
Well, T's and D's sound very similar.
Yeah, so thank you. I did have at least another note that I thought was fun. During the interrogation of the patient's scenes, I mean, there's a lot of, like, fun acting going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, there was.
But I believe it's the first person that they interview who's named Breen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I didn't get this far in the book, so I don't know if the character's name is Breen. But Joseph Breen historically was one of the biggest censors in Hollywood movies.
Oh, wow.
And they have the character of Breen saying some of the worst things
yes.
in the movie. And
oh, she wanted me to take my thing out.
Yes, exactly.
That's
and,
pretty great. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he then goes on to espouse the benefits of eugenics. So it's like they really paint him. So I really hope that changed
awesome.
That character's name and Scorsese is like poking at that. Cause,
yeah, we'll have to find out.
Yeah.
That's great.
It definitely sounds like something that he would do. So did you have any other...
No, not really. That was pretty much it for me.
Just looking through my notes here.
Overall, I give it a thumb up. Two thumbs up.
We don't do that. That's
nope.
not what we do.
Nope. Sorry.
But it definitely, you know, if you haven't seen it, I honestly don't know why you would have listened to the whole discussion.
What is your problem?
although I do.
We were so not in chronological order that you could still watch the movie
right.
And have those twists happen naturally because we were all over the place.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, much like DiCaprio's character in the movie, he's not remembering things chronologically.
Nope.
So it works. It's how your memory works. It's how your brain works. You reconstruct it to tell the story that that fits best for the moment. We don't have to live inside this podcast, unlike poor Teddy.
Oh, poor Teddy.
Poor Teddy.
Come out and play. All right. Thank you for listening. This is NPR, Fresh Morning Air.
See, you had it, and then like you, and then you turned it into a bit, and it was a bit.
I know.
So we should have some kind of wrap up, sign off, kind of thing.
Okay, let's see. I can't take Walter Cronkite's. It's been taken. Let's see. Well, thanks for listening. I can't believe you actually picked us and listened.
Yay.
And not because I sent out a Facebook message to you or an invite to listen.
Even if it is a friend who you bribed, that's still a listen.
Still a listen.
I count that as a win. And I'm perfectly okay with that. I will take those points. We haven't discussed what movie we'll talk about in the future, so I don't know what to have anybody watch, but stay tuned and you'll
see. We'll post it in the notes.
Yes, well, you'll see it in the show notes.
With everything we said wrong and...
yeah, all the corrections and where you can buy every single movie we referenced today.
Yes.
And the books, even the Freud. So... thank you for listening. I hope you have a good day.
Whoopity doo da.
Might have to come up with a different thing for that.
Yeah, we can retape that.
Yeah.
Just put it on the bloopers.
Yeah.
Wow.
So how was that?
That was easy.
That was easy.